Blog Talk Radio.
Seriously. When are we ever serious around here? But, good evening, and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Wow, a strange thing's going on there. Danny Binkley from The Weird in This Really Bad Movie.
Strange things, strange places, and what could be strange?
Gremlins were attacking my phone or something. I don't know.
You have gremlins in your phone. Well,
better
they have to pay to get in too. They have to pay to get in too. Damn those gremlins! But tonight we're going to continue our talk. We started last night about comic strips that are not so funny. Seriously. I mean,
seriously. Yep.
We all remember the fun, humorous comic strips, Peanuts and Dagwood and Blondie and oh gosh, hundreds of others throughout the years. But we're focusing more on the serious side of comic strips. And last night's radio shows reflected that, don't you think?
Yeah, it kind of like what we got tonight with some of the things. Tonight's is actually based on a true case from the FBI. So the comics aren't, especially these suspense ones, just really, I really enjoyed that. Not that I didn't care for the Shadow or the Mole Mystery Theater. Those were kind of classic old-time radios, but suspense, that was a whole different creature. If you didn't hear last night's broadcast, you got to get in there and hear that. Had a lot of radio last night, and it was was just absolutely tremendous. And you know, it made me kind of think, Dale, when these people who are the writers and artists for these comic strips, what a toll it takes on them mentally. It's almost like what could be with a ventriloquist, you know.
Well, sure. I think in any kind of entertainment, even acting, where you're crossing the line between fantasy and real life, you're taking on the characteristics of someone who's not yourself, whether it's a fantastic person or a historical person, if you're acting it out or writing about it or drawing it. Maybe a certain personality types can be sucked into that.
Yeah. I would think, especially, you know, you thought about the acting, especially if you're kind of pigeonholed into a particular type of role or something, you know, that would be a way, I guess, you could have a hard time breaking off from that. So, yeah, I could see how that could be. But I have to admit, the very first comic strip I ever started probably reading regularly was probably Nancy. Good old Nancy and Sluggo, and what was your first one that you started reading regularly in the newspaper?
Not to be confused with the Sluggo from the Vortex.
Oh,
hi,
no,
Sluggo.
No.
Yeah, but regularly, I'm probably, my earliest memories really go back to Peanuts, Charles Schulz. In addition to reading them in the dailies and waiting for the big color ones on Sunday. At some point, I went out and purchased a paperback that was a collection of, you know, a few years' worth of Peanuts strips. And you could see how Schulz's style kind of changed slightly,
yes.
You know, subtly. There were subtle changes in the shapes of their heads and I think even the size of their heads compared to their bodies, the characters, as he went along.
Right.
But
well,
his style was always the same, very charming.
Right.
You know.
Snoopy originally was a lot more of a puppy who turned into just a regular beagle.
Well, not a regular beagle.
Well, a regular Snoopy beetle, but other than that beagle, but yeah.
Most beagles don't imagine themselves as World War I flying aces, but I digress. I could be wrong there, though. I could be wrong.
You know, I did a little bit of research here, and we could share some between some of the different parts and things. I just did a little bit of work this afternoon. We have always talked about how the pulps, you know, kind of have influenced radios and maybe the movie serials and how radio influenced some movies and television. But what we really didn't think about was how the comic strips have influenced many of the different media. For instance, Popeye hit the comic strips in 1929, hit the cartoons in 1933, and you remember who introduced him to the cartoons?
Betty Boop, of course.
Betty Boop, you're right. And it was an episode of Betty Boop called Popeye the Sailor, and certainly went on to be very, very popular Fleischman Brothers cartoon there.
Yeah.
We had Blondie.
Along, all the way into King Features, and then, of course, later the Robin Williams film adaptation of Popeye.
Yes, that was kind of fun.
It was cute.
Blondie, of course, came to the comic strips in 1930, to the movies 1938 through 1950, and then to radio 1939 through 1950, basically using the same cast that when they weren't busy making the movies, they took out time out to do radio, and the radio would help, in a sense, promote the movies.
And those were so charming with Penny Singleton and Arthur Lake as Blondie and Dagwood.
Of course,
we
got to
bring them to Erie House somehow, some way, whether we can find a Halloween show or something. We're going to weasel them into here because it's very good radio.
There's a fun thing because we've shared some clips from Baby Schnooks and Daddy. There's an episode where Baby Schnooks shows up at the Bumsteads as well. Hanley Stanford, who played Daddy for most of the run of Baby Schnooks and Daddy, he was Mr. Dithers in the radio series. So many of these shows, as always, tie into each other. Bringing up Father came to the comic strips in 1913, came to Broadway as a play in 1914, to radio in 1941, to cartoons, actually 1916 through 1918, and those were as cartoons. And then there were three shorts in 1920, and then to the movies. In 1928 through 1950, there were a series of seven different movies. So I'll go through one more right now, and then we'll kind of cut it. We've got Gasoline Alley. I talked a little bit about last night. That was kind of one of my early ones that I did kind of watch through. As far as I know, that's still in some newspapers. Came to the comic strips in 1980. Came to radio in 1948. Those were 15-minute, basically serialized-type stories that would continue on the next day. And then on to the movies. They did two movies in 1951. As far as I know, never really made it to television outside of perhaps as characters inside a couple of multi-character cartoons. So, but we'll have some more of these coming up later on. Oh, there, Fogsman says, Family Circus, Wizard of Id. Oh, you know what? I forgot about the Wizard of Id since they took it out of the Beacon. It's still in the Plain Dealer, isn't it?
I no longer get a newspaper delivered.
Okay. But I'm pretty sure Cleveland Plain Dealer still has it. We still get the Family Circus. There were two of the local newspaper printed ones that he read every week. Oh, yeah, of course, the Hagar the Horrible. You know what I didn't tell you, Dale, or I've never shared over the radio, is Al Klesh, who plays the devil and many character roles in the Weirdness Really Bad movies. He and I, every other week, get together and do 2 half-hours of the comics, both dailies and Sundays, that we share with the blind over the radio reading service.
Oh, how nice.
And
That's got to be fun, because I know you both can do great character voices to liven up those comic strips.
Yeah, we usually start off by giving about anywhere between 5 and 8.5 minutes of jabber about all the stupid things we've done throughout the week or our lives. And then we started in the comics, and then between each comic, we have an old we have a TV theme song that goes in there. So we call it a half hour of fun and funnies, and get a lot of comics in there. But then we just have fun with it, and hopefully because we're having fun, they're having fun too.
Yep, it's all about the listeners, and thanks for tuning in to listen to us live. Hi, Fogs, and everyone else. Glad you are with us. Yeah, Foggy also mentioned Family Circus and Hagar. Dilbert and Farside are very good, too.
Comics yep, Dilbert is do a lot. One I love, which Al just doesn't get, is the Get Fuzzy. But I tell Al, and he has cats, Al, you have to think like a cat. If you think like a cat, this strip makes perfect sense. And with that, I do Bucky the Cat. And so, you know, it just, you get that kind of crazy. And so, and he does a Satchel the Dog, kind of like that type thing. So, he may not like it, he may not get it, but he still does it anyway.
Hey, that's fine. Yeah. I used to love Calvin and Hobbes, you know, my interest in horror and stuff. My favorite ones are when... Calvin makes like these horrible, I mean, absolutely horrifying snowman sculptures in various tortured scenes.
That those big dinosaur snow sculptures and things like that. Now, he's a guy that is basically retired and living I think it's somewhere around Chagrin Falls.
Yes. Yes, he's from the area and
never identified him.
Run.
Yeah. Very much protected by the community that he's staying, and he just stays anonymous and does a lot of fishing and water paintings, I guess.
That is cool. Another Clevelander that we had an indirect brush with is a gentleman named Mike Curtis. He had donated a whole bunch of Superman memorabilia to our library, Cleveland Public Library, which Dave and I documented this special that they were running at the library and in tribute and got wonderful video of all the display stuff, and we learned some new things. And Mr. Curtis is an artist for a very historical, non-comical comic strip called Dick Tracy.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
By sheer coincidence, or not, maybe not... We have a radio episode of Dick Tracy tonight.
We do. Would we like to start with that? We could do that.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, you think of all the innovations that Dick Tracy had. Went from the wrist radio watch to the wrist TV watch. He used the first ones used like a helicopter type thing and different things that kind of were sci-fi at the time for a detective. When you look at the old serials and the movies, it didn't seem like he was that smart of a guy or anything. But
I know. and you would think it would be comical in nature because look at the villains, Flat Top, and these peculiar named and peculiar looking villains.
Yeah, well, a cue ball and the mole. And you know what? There's sometime we will have to bring to Erie House Radio. It was a special presentation, an hour-long presentation of Command Performance, which was made for the servicemen. And this was an operetta, and it had in it Bing Crosby and Bob Hope and Jimmy Durante and Burgess Meredith and Diana Schur and I'm trying to think who all else was in this. It was a operetta and it was called Dick Tracy in B flat. It's absolutely hilarious. Judy Garland was in there. I'm just thinking of more people that were in there. A really fun hour to spend doing Dick Tracy in B flat sometime. We got to do that some night that we're on with Gar, because I know he would get a giant kick out of that.
We'll do it some Friday here on Erie House Radio. But tonight's episode is called Going After the Ring.
Now, Dick Tracy was kind of a serialized thing where it usually took several parts. Maybe one night we'll do like five parts or something like that where it kind of tells basically a complete story. But the problem with having a complete story is it usually leads right into the next story. So, the Dick Tracy. But this particular episode is from February 17th, 1938.
And we'll be back after this.
Calling all adventure fans, calling all Dick Tracy fans. Stand by, Dick Tracy is on the air. The makers of Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice, those delicious, nourishing cereals that are shot from guns, bring you another thrilling Dick Tracy adventure. That's the way the big guns in the Quaker plant sound when they're making puffed wheat and puffed rice. Remember that the next time you sit down to a big dish of crisp, crunchy puffed wheat or puffed rice for breakfast. That special, careful Quaker process, plus the fact that puffed wheat and puffed rice are triple-sealed in moisture-proof packages, keeps Quaker puffed wheat and Quaker puffed rice firm, crisp, and plump for you. And that's why they taste so much better than ordinary cereals. Puffed wheat and puffed rice are specially easy to digest, too. Each grain of sun-ripened wheat or rice is actually exploded to 8 times its normal size when it's shot from the guns. Each tiny food cell is unlocked so that you get all the trigger-fast food energy quickly and easily. It's the kind of energy that helps make you strong, healthy, and alert like Dick Tracy. So join the thousands of happy puffed wheat and puffed rice fans. And if there isn't one of those famous red and blue packages in the pantry now, be sure to remind Mother to ask the grocer for some Quaker puffed wheat or Quaker puffed rice. And remember, there'll be a secret code message today, so have your pencil and paper ready. The black pearl of Osiris, belonging to an Egyptian society dedicated to the worship of the ancient god Osiris, is desired by a band of thieves and murderers. Dick Tracy has concealed the pearl in the secret compartment of a mysterious ring given to him by Umi Batik of the cult of Osiris, who told Dick it would bring him good luck. In our last episode, we heard how Dick Patton Jr., while dining in a restaurant, suddenly realized they were surrounded by henchmen of the murderous band.
I've noticed, Pat, that we're being watched. 4 different tables around us, certain shady-looking gentry have not taken their eyes off us. Don't look up now.
No, I won't. What do you think we ought to do?
Well, I'm trying to formulate a plan. We're undoubtedly after the ring and the Black Pearl. Yes, we're surrounded, Pat. I can see that now.
We've got to do something, Dick.
I'll say. Get ready for trouble. We're going to have plenty of them. We try to leave this restaurant. Go on with your dinner, both of you. Pay no attention. Pretend okay. You haven't noticed a thing.
What? This dinner's got to end sometime, Dick.
Yes, I know, Junior. By that time, let's hope we'll dig up an idea that will get us out of here safely. Ah, that was good coffee. Finished, Pat?
Yeah, I'm finished. I'll tell you one thing, though. I certainly didn't enjoy my dinner the way you evidently did.
I didn't get much fun out of this food either. Gosh, Dick, I don't know how you do it. We're surrounded on all sides by these men, and you calmly eat your dinner.
And enjoys it, too.
Well, why not? Nothing could have happened until we were finished, ready to go.
Look, Dick, 5 or 6 of those guys are going outside.
Yeah, they see we're through with dinner, and they will be going out any moment. Well, shall we go?
Into the hands of that welcoming committee out there? Could we have some more coffee? I really feel like having another cup.
Not bad. It'll keep you awake tonight. Unless I'm mistaken, you'll have plenty to perk you up in a few minutes.
Gee, Dick, aren't you worried at all?
Well, I'm trying not to be. If you try hard enough, you know. Here, I'll take the checks. Come along. Cashier's down this way.
225 out of 5. Here's your change, sir.
Thank you.
Hey, look. Those guys at the other tables are following us out, sort of nonchalantly.
Not a very good way of showing nonchalance, is it? Just have your gun ready. Junior, I've taught you how to stay out of harm's way if anything happens. See that you do it.
No, not me. I'm going to stick to you, Dick.
You'll do as I say. All right, now. There's the door to the street. Let's get going. Well, there's the car.
Yeah, and a couple of fellows leaning against the fenders.
Come on.
Just a minute, buddy, just a minute. This your car?
Yes, do you mind?
Maybe you don't know it, buddy, but this is my private parking place, see? I usually parks me car here.
Well, that's very interesting. Step aside, please.
Wait a minute. Where do you think you're going?
What's the matter, Joe? This guy getting tough?
Yeah. Looking for a paste in the jaw.
So happens I wasn't looking for anything. However, I see that you very possibly are, and so...
Hey, you can't do that well.
Get in, Pat. Junior, quick.
Come on.
Get him, boys. Get him.
Here they come, Dick.
Let him have it, Pat. Keep behind me, Junior.
That's the old feather weight. The ring getter. They're trying to get the ring.
Keep slugging and stop talking.
Get him, you guys.
The cops. They're coming, Dick.
Yeah. Swing kind of wild, aren't you, big fella? Here's the way to do it.
Run, you guys. Run. It's the cops. Chase up.
They're running away, Dick.
So I see. Well, they're taking a few of our souvenirs and they're yours.
Yeah.
Hey, what's been going on here? Street fight, Chief. Well, we'll see.
Hello, Donovan. Lovely evening, isn't it?
Tracy, well, what the devil
is... All right, Donovan, it's all right.
The boys are chasing those rascals. They'll bring him in all right.
Good. Meantime, I've got hold of someone's coat. I grabbed one of those yeggs by the collar and he slipped out of the coat, leaving it in my hands.
I wish we had gotten the fellow in the coat.
Perhaps we will, Pat.
Oh, Dick. Oh, great Scott, Dick.
What's the matter?
Your finger. Look. The ring. The secret ring of Osiris. It's gone.
Gosh. Gee, then so was the Black Pearl.
Oh, they got it. They got it after all.
No. They didn't get it, Pat. Because, you see, you have it.
I have it? Now, listen, Dick, this is no time for gags.
Feel in your pocket. The right-hand pocket.
Huh? Let me see. Well, I'll be a cross-eyed owl. It is the ring. How'd it get in my pocket?
I put it there. I slipped it off and put it in your side pocket. I knew they'd try to get the ring. They were sure I was wearing it. I didn't think they'd suspect you.
Yeah, that certainly was fooling them, all right, Dick.
Two of them made for the hand that was supposed to be wearing the ring. I'm afraid they were a little disappointed when it folded into a fist.
Yeah, I'll bet they were, Dick. If only we knew where we could get our hands on that gang. If we had some idea of their hideout.
We do have, Pat. Or rather, we will.
What do you mean?
We've got the clue we've been looking for. And now, once again, we can take the offensive. I much prefer it as a fighting move to watching and having to be on the defensive.
What is the clue you're talking about, Dick?
This coat, Pat. The coat I took away from one of those gangsters.
Well, I don't get it. How can a coat help us find the gangster's hideout?
Well, of course, I'm not sure it will, but I'm going to have a try. Come on, let's get down to my private laboratory at headquarters.
Why your private laboratory?
There are certain things there I need, Pat, including a vacuum cleaner.
A vacuum cleaner? Hey, as I said before...
I know. You don't get it, but you will.
Hey, Dick, what's the point of going over that coat with a hand vacuum?
Yeah, come on, let us in on it, will you, Dick? Why all the little piles of dirt you put on the table? Why don't you put them all in one big pile?
Well, you see, Pat, each one of those piles of dirt is labeled. Now, this pile here came from the right-hand pocket of the coat.
Yeah?
This one came from the left-hand pocket. This pile here is the dust I took out of the back of the coat. And when I empty this dust bag, this little pile will be the dust from the sleeves.
All of which adds up to what?
Well, Pat, you know that there's more to being a detective than hand-to-hand encounters with criminals. There are times when the fight against crime is carried on not by guns and forces, but science and skill. Some of the most brilliant wars against crime are fought and won in scientific laboratories. Now, I said that this code would lead us to the gang's hideout, and it's going to do just that. And yeah, let's see. Hand me that microscope, will you, Junior?
Sure, I will. Here you are, Dick.
Thanks. Now we'll examine each of these little piles separately. Yeah. Have a look, Patrick.
Okay.
Well, what do you see?
Well, you got me. All I see are some particles of black stuff that look like hair. And some gray dust that gleams a little bit. And some more gray stuff that seems sort of dull. And some colored particles of, well, it might be cloth.
Is that all, Pat?
Yeah, I think so. What else is there to see?
Yeah, let me have a look, Pat.
Well, Pat, you'll have to learn to identify things like that at first glance. It took me several years of study, but it was worth it. Tracing the origin of these little particles, being able to build up the story they have to tell, is indispensable to a detective. Now, let me demonstrate.
Go ahead, I'm waiting.
Those black particles that look like hair, Pat, they're really horse hair. I'll test them later, but I'm sure of it without testing them.
All right, horse hair. So what?
Those gray particles that gleam in the light, they're particles of emery dust from machines, Pat, machines.
Horse hair and emery dust. Come on.
Now, these gray particles that don't gleam are particles of felt. Gray felt.
Gray felt. I'm still listening.
And those other little pieces of dust, the colored pieces, are particles of vari-colored cloth. You see, Pat, your clothes pick up and retain the dust that is in the air about you. Examine the clothes of a man who works, let's say, for a coal company. And his clothes will contain coal dust. A man who works in a coffee factory will have particles of coffee beans in his pockets and in the dust of his coat, and so on.
Okay, but where does all this get us?
Well, Pat, don't you see? We've taken from this coat particles of horse hair, emery dust, felt, and colored cloth. Now all we've got to do is to decide what industry uses these articles. In other words, what's made out of them.
Put them all together and they spell zero for me.
Well, as I figured out, Pat, the one product in which these particles will be found exclusively, including the horse hair, would be mattresses.
Mattresses, eh? Oh, say, that's right. I should have thought of that. Now what? Where do we go from here?
Well, don't you get it, Pat? All this means is that the gang we're after probably has its hideout in or near a mattress factory.
Well, I'll be darned. Say, Dick, that's amazing. And a lucky thing it was that you got that coat.
Well, don't let's get too excited about this. We may not be right. But we've got to find out how many mattress factories there are in this town. And we've got to check every one of them.
But it's getting pretty late, Tracy. How long do you intend to stay at headquarters and keep these men here?
We'll have to wait until I hear from Pat. We've discovered that there are only three mattress factories in town. There are three squads out now. Pat's in charge of the squad on Clay Street, and he's going to report back to me the moment he gets what we're looking for.
And what are you looking for?
Proof that one of those factories is being used as a hideout by the gang we're after. Factories are being watched very closely. They're supposed to be shut at this time of night. If the boys see anyone prowling near one of them, entering the building, they'll know that that's the one we want.
Will Pat telephone?
Yes. I've told him to use the code. We're taking no chances on a slip-up.
Swell idea. Well, Tracy, I hope you're right about this mattress factory business. I know you're a bug on scientific detection and all that, and you've always been right in the past.
We'll just have to wait and see. Yes?
Patton speaking.
Go ahead, Pat.
Buffalo, 14, 1, 11, 18, 21, 4, and hurry.
Right. Let's see that code book. Buffalo, 14, 1, 11, 18, 20. Wait a minute, that's the end of that word. Buffalo, 14, 1, 11, 18, 21, 4. Just what I've been waiting for. All right, men, let's get going.
Is Dick Tracy on the right trail at last? Will he bring the thieves to justice? And what was the code message that Pat sent over the phone? Well, you'll know in a minute, because it's time for our Dick Tracy Secret Service Patrol meeting brought to you by the makers of Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice, those two specially delicious, specially nourishing cereals that are shot from guns. Okay, Junior.
The meeting will now come to order.
So get your pencil and paper ready, patrol member, because Junior is going to repeat the secret code message that Pat sent Dick Tracy today.
Are you all ready? Here's the message. It's Buffalo, 14, 1, 11, 18, 21, 4.
Better repeat it, Junior, so all the patrol members are sure to get it.
Okay, Mr. Quaker Man. Are you ready, members? It's Buffalo, 14, 1, 11, 18, 21, 4.
Now, when you decode that secret message, you'll know where Dick Tracy is headed on the trail of the High Mogul.
And here's some extra good news, patrol members. Dick Tracy is going to tell us all about that big surprise tomorrow. Isn't that great?
So be sure you're listening in, patrol members. Believe me, it's something you just wouldn't miss for anything.
Do you know what it is, Mr. Quaker Man?
Yes, Junior, but I promised Dick I wouldn't tell a soul.
Come on, you can tell me.
No, Junior, you'll have to wait till tomorrow, too. All I can say is, start saving Quaker Puffed Wheat and Quaker Puffed Rice box tops right now, because you'll certainly wish you had when Dick Tracy tells you what that big surprise is.
Boy, I can hardly wait.
And here's another thing, boys and girls. Every box top you save also means a lot of delicious, quick-energy breakfast for you and Mother and Dad. So have Quaker Puffed Wheat one day and Quaker Puffed Rice the next. The way thousands of boys and girls and grown-ups do. And that gives you a grand taste variety because there are two different delicious flavors of the famous cereals that are shot from guns. There go the big guns now to remind you to have your delicious, nourishing puffed wheat and puffed rice breakfast regularly. so that you get lots of that same kind of trigger-fast food energy that keeps Dick Tracy so alert. So look in the pantry to make sure there's some there, and if there isn't, ask Mother to get some Quaker puffed wheat and Quaker puffed rice at the grocer's. And be sure to save the box tops.
Calling all adventure fans, calling all Dick Tracy fans. Stand by for another exciting Dick Tracy adventure tomorrow at this same time. That is all.
What a grand time to be a kid. Not only do you get these great adventure stories, but you have the excitement of mailing away for stuff with box tops and then waiting 2 months for it to come in the mail because they didn't have Amazon or UPS or any of that stuff.
Well, interesting history that company has, too. Because actually, guess what? There's an Ohio connection to Quaker Oats Company.
Of course there is.
Of course there is. It was actually Quaker Oats was formed by the merging of four different oat mills. The Quaker Mill Company in Ravenna, which is about, probably about 35 to 40 minutes right from where I'm sitting right now. I lived there for a short time, which is longer than I wanted to live there. The cereal mill in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and the Rob and Lewis American Oats and Barley Oatmeal Corporation, formerly known as Good for Breakfast Instant Oatmeal, and the German Mills American Oatmeal Company, owned by the Oatmeal King, Ferdinand Schumacher, in Akron. So for a while, actually, it was even headquartered here in Akron. And the old silos that were one time the silos for the grain which they made the cereal with was in the 1970s turned into a hotel. And the rest of the building was turned into a mall. It was called the Quaker Square Mall and the Quaker Hilton. And it was that eventually was bought out by the University of Akron. They closed the hotel, made it dorm rooms, and the mall had ceased to pretty much exist before that outside of a couple of restaurants that were still in there.
It was
quite
nice.
Innovative.
I remember
company.
It in its heyday.
It quite innovative. In 69, they acquired Fisher-Price, a toy company that they spun off in 91. In the 70s, this is something I never knew, Quaker Company, they financed the making of the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And by doing that, they obtained return a license to use a number of the product names mentioned in the movie for candy bars. So it was a Quaker Oats Company that originally had all those Willy Wonka bars and the Ever Gobstoppers and all those things. In 1983, Quaker bought the Stokely Van Camp, which is good old pork and beans, and the makers of Gatorade. Then they bought Snapple for $1.17 billion in 94, sold it to Tyrannic, and Tyrannic sold it to Schweppes, and I think its current owner is the Dr. Pepper Snapple Group. In 96, it spun off its frozen food business, selling it to Aurora Foods, and in August 2001, Quaker was bought by PepsiCo. Oh, and I forgot, big one here, in 82, they formed the U.S. Games Company that created games for Atari 2600. Went out of business 1 year after. but that good old Atari 2600, some of those games are directly attributed to the Quaker Oats Company. So it just, but PepsiCo now owns the Quaker brand and all of its things that it doesn't own anymore. So there it goes.
Oh, cool.
But based right here in Akron for a while, and even Ravenna, Ohio, or as I like to say, Revanna. But
yep. It's a big company, Quaker Oats, and a big part of how many of our cereals had the Quaker Oats symbol on it.
Absolutely, and
back in the day.
Yeah, and working with all those toy, like you said, all those toy companies for all those premiums and all the other cereals that they created and such. So, yeah.
I think they were the creators of Quisp and Quake, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're right, yes.
I think that was a Quaker Oats thing.
It was. And those two are still around as well.
Hard to find, but they're around.
But so yeah, that's kind of a little bit of digs on the Quaker Oats Company.
Yes,
and its Ohio connection.
And we just heard a wonderful Dick Tracy story. I wonder if there's anything that can be learned from it.
Could be.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
It's apologies to Gar. If you're looking for a paste in the jaw, don't reach for the Elmers. Reach for the old-timey radio on Eerie House Radio.
Oh, now
there
that's a moral I can get behind.
Yeah, you shouldn't stand in front of it anyway. So, better get behind it.
With what I think the count was up to 130 some shows about a week or two ago for this year. Radio programs that we've played.
It was. What did I have? Wrong spreadsheet. Wrong. Let's bring up the other spreadsheet, which is right here. Come on, Mr. Spread. Oh, there we go. All right. I have 132, and that's with 112 clips. And that's not including what we've done this weekend so far. So,
and that was as of September 1st, yeah. So,
and that was this year. That isn't the over 100 that we did last year.
Yeah. So really what you can do, if you like, and I think you should, is quit your job and just listen to these shows. Start from the first one, you know, the first Eerie House Radio, and just keep listening. When you're done, you'll have forgotten the first ones, and you can start over again, and we'll have added more by the time you come around again. So there.
Or at the very least, if they offer you early retirement, take it, and you could do it that the same thing. Just use your early retirement for that.
There you go.
With all the home deliveries, the groceries, you ought to be caught up in about a year because you know we keep making them. So you know.
Yeah. Every Friday and Saturday. Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Saturday 6:30 p.m. Eastern, and we have yet another comic strip story for you tonight. And this is an interesting show. I think it's a first, Dave, isn't it, here on Eerie House?
It is. We don't do a lot of crime shows, but we've done a Dragnet, and we've done a few of detectives. But we haven't done many really crime shows outside of a couple of Dragnets. This is a episode of This Is Your FBI. Now, this show might not have even been made, have it not been for the year before, a program called The FBI in Peace and War came out. And the fact is, J. Edgar Hoover didn't like The FBI in Peace and War. He thought it was very unrealistic, and so he wanted a program to be made that used true FBI cases. And that's exactly what happened the next year, so the FBI is in Peace and War, I think it was in 1944 and 1945, came along with this, and he actually, J. Edgar Hoover, actually endorsed This Is Your FBI program. Mm. And what's funny is the year that this show aired in 1952, this was rated number 12 of the top 20 shows of the year. Not this particular episode, but the entire series was rated number 12 for the year of 1952 in the, they weren't Hoopers, then they were Nielsen's at that point. The Hoopers kind of faded out in 49 and 50, Nielsen's did take over, which is what one of the major industry television ratings are for today. But yeah, they were number 12 in 1952.
It's a very popular show, and Dave, you selected a real good one for us, and it fits our genre our topic, if you will, for the weekend, which is not so funny comics, comic strips. And this episode is called The Comic Strip Bandits.
From September 19th, 1952.
We'll be back after part one.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This Is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Presented transcribed as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. There is one thing every husband and wife want to do for their children. That's to see that they get the finest possible education. Now, some people think you've got to be well off to provide such an education. That's not true. Your local representative of the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States knows the answer. No matter what your insurance problem may be, future security for your wife and children, owning your own home years before you thought you could, providing for an independent life after 60, ask your friendly Equitable representative. He can help you. In about 13 minutes, I'd like to tell you more about him and how you, too, may enjoy the advantages and freedom from worry that come with membership in the Equitable Society. Tonight, the subject of our FBI file, Theft of Government Property. Its title, The Comic Strip Bandits. Of the many criminals threatening you, the American citizen, the thief ranks among the most dangerous. The professional thief will steal anything of value from any person at any time. In tonight's case, you will hear of thieves operating on a large scale. But these same criminals began their careers with thefts of less valuable objects. The petty thief does not always remain a petty thief. The criminal who has completed a theft of great value will not necessarily pass up an opportunity to steal an object he must sell for less than his former theft. A car thief may steal a bicycle next. And as in tonight's case, a thief may steal government property and become the subject of a relentless search by the agents of your FBI. Tonight's file opens in a large Midwestern city. It is night. And at a waterfront pier, a refrigerator truck drives onto the pier and stops at the edge. A sedan pulls up behind it, and a tall man leaves the automobile and joins the driver of the truck.
You leave the emergency off?
Yeah. Get on the other side. Let's get this over with.
The tall man moves into position. Both men shove the truck toward the water. As the truck submerges, the two men climb into the waiting car, which is being driven by a woman. And as the car pulls away, a fourth person appears on the scene. A middle-aged man who has been sprawled against a crate slowly lifts himself to his knees and looks after the disappearing car. Then he rises to his feet and staggers to a saloon across from the pier.
What'll it be, Bentley?
Something to keep the hand steady and the memory clear, right? Make a gin.
That's what you had last night to keep the tongue ready and the wit sharp, unquote.
Yeah, so I did, so I did. Roy, would you believe what I just saw?
All depends. How many elephants?
Crude, but funny. A truck, my friend, a truck pushed into the water from the pier across the street.
Yeah.
Yes, an amazing way to wash a truck. There were two of them, two men, one, two. One truck, one. One car and one woman. Add them up and what'd you get? Splash!
Oh, brother, the cork goes on for you tonight.
Yeah, hand me that menu.
Yeah, it's about time you remembered to eat. Pick a sandwich.
What did I do with that pencil? Where's my pencil? Here we are.
Hey, what gives? Stop marking that up.
The marks, my friend, are the beginning of art. If my tongue can't explain what I saw, my talent shall.
Oh, for peace. Look, it's late. Why not head for a nice soft bed?
Shh, shh, shh. Well, boy, sleep. Sleep can wait, and the world can wait. But the pen, once moving, must follow through.
On my menu yet.
Now, let's see. The shading, right in there, the shading.
Hey, that ain't half bad.
A half thank you for a half a compliment.
No, I mean it. You're pretty good.
Now, the car was right over here, and the woman in it.
Hey, you draw the faces of them guys good. Why are you making the dame so dark?
Well, I couldn't see her very well, Roy, and I refused to improvise. This picture is the negative, and the camera is my eyes.
Hey, that's okay.
Well, it's not quite the caliber of the work I did for the paper, but it'll do.
Paper? You ever work on a paper?
Socko the Clown, the Gazette, their leading strip.
Well, I remember that strip. My wife was crazy about it.
Well, then I respect your wife's sanity. Ah, but look at this, Roy. I turned this latest endeavor into the paper, and they're sure to hire me again. And all because I saw a truck go swimming. A refill, Roy, to celebrate.
Uh-uh. If you're still on that truck kick, you've had enough.
Roy, my tongue may lie, but my pen, never. Yeah, look at that picture, man.
So it's good. So what?
So I shall take this graphic expose to the Gazette, where I shall be greeted with appreciation. Farewell, my friend. Farewell, Roy. May Socko the Clown again improve your wife's humor. And she, in turn, yours.
The following morning at the local FBI field office, Special Agent Jim Taylor reports to Agent Bill Crawford, just assigned to the case.
That's real good to see you, Bill.
Same here, Jim, only you look beat.
Well, I've been up most of the night. Truckload of meat was hijacked while the driver was having coffee in a diner.
Oh, where do we come in?
It's theft of government property. The meat was for troops overseas and already paid for by the Army.
Mm-hmm, I see. Any leads?
Yeah, a few. Truck driver had the key in his pocket. The thief couldn't have had time in front of the busy diner to fix the ignition wire, so he must have had a duplicate key.
Yeah, inside job?
Could be, Bill. Local police got a report last night from a night watchman at a factory on Water Street. They called us.
Mm-hmm.
Seems the watchman saw two trucks parked near the factory. One answered the description of the meat truck.
Two trucks, transferring?
Yeah, the watchman only saw two men, but they apparently transferred the meat in a hurry. Yeah. By the time the police got there, the trucks had gone.
Was the watchman able to describe the second truck, Jim?
No, not too well. He did notice which direction they left in, though. One turned and went down 9th.
Back toward the city?
Yeah, that's right. And the other headed toward water. Well, I checked. There's no street wide enough for that truck to turn off between the factory and the river.
Mm-hmm.
I found a broken guardrail down at the end of the pier.
Then it's a cinch that truck's at the bottom of the river.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I've hired a diver to go down to the pier and take a look, Bill. Meanwhile, here's the name and address of the truck driver's carrying that meat.
All right, thanks.
Look him up and get his story, will you?
Right.
I'll meet you later at the pier.
Jim?
Oh, hello, Bill.
You located the truck yet?
No, Fulton just went down. Pretty sure thing to be there.
Oh, Mr. Taylor.
There he is. Yes, Fulton?
I found the truck. It's a little to the left of the pier.
Good. Now, Fulton, will you be able to get inside the cab?
Yeah, one of the doors is open.
Fine, take a look inside, will you?
Yes, right.
How'd you make out, Bill?
Well, I interviewed the boy who drove the truck. He has a good record. Been with the company 7 years since he was discharged from the Army.
That's what his employer said when I spoke to him. He vouched for the boy. Looks as if the kid...
Oh, Mr. Taylor.
Yes, Fulton?
I'm inside the cab now. The ignition key is still on the switch.
That's a break, Jim.
Yeah. Fulton.
Yeah?
Bring it up, will you?
Yes, sir.
Here's the lab report on that key.
Good. All right, we may have another break. A man named Roy Graham is on his way back here from the reception room.
Oh?
Says he saw a story about the meat theft in the papers. May have something for us.
Well, I hope so. As you can see, all the lab could raise off that key was the letter T and the words key service.
Yeah. This T must be the last letter of the firm name, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Bill, you want to take it from here and check all the key-making services that fit that category?
Right.
Fine.
Mr. Taylor?
Yeah, right in there.
Thank you.
Mr. Graham?
That's right. I hope I haven't come here on a bum steer, Mr. Taylor.
Well, we appreciate you trying to help. Won't you sit down, please?
Thanks.
Just what kind of information do you have, sir?
Well, like I say, it might be haywire, but Bentley said something the other night, and I thought I'd better let you know.
Bentley?
Oh, he's a guy who hangs around down where I work. I'm a bartender at the Cove, right across from where the truck was dumped.
Oh, I see. Well, go on, please.
Well, Bentley comes in late the night the papers say the truck was pushed off the pier, and he begins telling me the story about seeing two men shove the truck off.
Oh, he was close enough to see them?
Oh, yes, sir, real good.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe him, so he draws me a picture. He used to draw cartoons for a paper, see? And his picture is real good.
Yeah.
But I still don't believe him. Then he leaves and says he's going to give the picture to the Gazette.
Uh-huh. Any idea where this Mr. Bentley lives?
Oh, he lives at different rooming houses all along Skid Row. Hard to tell which one he's in these days, though.
I say, well, we'll check them all. Thanks again, Mr. Graham.
Bentley. Bentley. Oh, yes, here we are.
Good.
Brother checked him in last night. He's got the second bed right in the dry dock.
Dry dock?
Yes, the big room right through that door.
Oh, I see. Thanks very much. Mr. Bentley?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bentley?
Huh?
Mr. Bentley, will you please wake up, sir?
Come here.
Mr. Bentley, I'd like to speak to you. I'm Special Agent Taylor of the FBI.
Young man, the world is full of speech. The cartoons are full of speech. Give me pantomime any day. My boy, sleep is pantomime. Pull up a bed.
Come here. Oh, Mr. Bentley. Look, Mr. Bentley, a man named Roy Graham told me you saw a truck pushed off the Water Street Pier.
Yeah.
He also said you drew a picture of what you'd seen. I'm interested in seeing that picture, if you don't mind.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Picture.
That's right.
The picture. Oh, yes, yes. Coming back. I remember that. Oh, of course, of course. Oh, you're from the paper. The editor of the Gazette sent you, right?
No, I'm afraid not. I'm a special agent of the FBI, sir.
Well, what about that? The Gazette didn't have to go that far to find me. Not that I don't appreciate it. But look here. If they want me back, they must agree to print my cartoons the old way.
Well, now, Mr.
We
Bentley,
must make the picture. The comedy, the thing.
I know, Mr.
And all
what
this
I'd like
stupid
to ask...
emphasis on story, story, story.
Bentley, please.
Nowadays, you have to have suspense.
You just listen to
mystery,
me, sir.
Tragedy. There's a lot of phooey. Comedy. Wham. Bam. Stop. Wow.
Mr. Bentley.
That's the thing.
Mr. Bentley, look, please.
Hmm?
The paper didn't send me, sir. That truck was stolen. This call is official business for the government. Now, about that picture, sir. Did you sketch the actual details of the men you saw by the truck?
Of course. Of course. I saw them well, and I drew them well.
Good. Now, Mr. Graham said you took the picture to the paper. Well, I've checked at the Gazette, and they hadn't received it. And they said you hadn't been there either.
Now, wait a minute. As I remember it... Oh, yeah, I was too tired to make the trip. I came directly here, I think.
Uh-huh. Well, could you describe the men for me, Mr. Bentley?
Describe... Well, I don't see. Young man... Now, gin has always sharpened my memory, but unfortunately, sleep has always dulled it. And as you see, I have overindulged in sleep.
Well, then, perhaps the cartoon, you must have it with you, sir.
Of course, the cartoon, of course.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where is it, Mr.
Safe, Bentley? Safe, young man. I put everything under my pillow. The creation's under the pillow, the creator above the pillow. Now I shall remove this wall between art and artist, and presto! And it's not there.
We will return in just a moment to tonight's exciting case from the official files of your FBI. But right now, I'd like to ask you a personal question. What will you be doing when you're in your 60s? Will you be dependent on your children or relatives? Or will you be able to live where you like and do as you please? That was the problem that Mr. Edward Fallon had to face until he became a member of the Equitable Life Assurance Society. Am I right, Mr. Fallon?
Yes, indeed. A couple of years ago, I suddenly realized I was getting close to 40. I didn't have much money in the bank and not an awful lot coming in. My wife and I were both worried about what would happen to us when I had to retire or if something happened to me.
Well, that's quite a problem for a lot of us. Would you mind telling us how Equitable solved the problem for you?
We heard you describe a plan that would give us freedom from money worries in our 60s.
That's the Equitable Independent 60s plan.
That's right. So I took your advice and called up my local Equitable representative, one of the smartest moves I ever made. He explained how the Independent 60s plan would give us a comfortable income, a handsome check every week, how we could live where we wanted, come and go as we pleased, and how my wife would get money if something happened to me. The pleasant surprise was how little it cost. Nowadays, whenever my friends discuss money troubles, I tell them to call up my good friend, the Equitable Man.
That's very sound advice. If you have life insurance problems, if you want to own your own home free and clear, if you want to provide an education for your children, talk it over with your Equitable representative. He's neighborly, helpful, and he knows the answers. Simply consult your local telephone directory for the name of your local Equitable Society representative.
That's EQUITABLE.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States.
I know on a commercial when I see one, or hear one in this case.
You know what? I don't know about you, but I don't have any close personal friends that are insurance agents. So, you know.
No.
I would close personal friend.
My experiences are such that some of the insurance people I've met would not be friends for long.
But basically, with the Equitable Life Insurance or any life insurance, you're betting against your own life, buddy.
Yep. Yeah. How long will I live?
Story going on there. And you got a witness who doesn't remember what he drew.
Well, I think he's been in the bottle a bit there.
I think he's been there for a while, but obviously still has some great artistic talent to it.
And a sense of humor. Yeah, this is kind of an interesting story here, and I'm curious to see or hear what's going to happen to this poor drunkard.
Will they find the paper? Did he slobber on it? Like, and it just mess. You never know.
Sounds like he's in over his head a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he sounds like he was has something that really wasn't in his control for a while, which is his own ability to stay sober.
Yeah. I almost expect him to sit up and bolt upright and yell,
"Make me a size of Jackson food!"
Might happen. Might happen.
Might happen. But this is a good story. I can almost feel a little bit of the flavor of Dragnet in there. Do you know what I'm driving at?
Yeah, because, again, this is based on a true file case from the FBI instead of from the Los Angeles Police Department.
Right, but the actual presentation, it has that feel as well.
And actually, this would predate Dragnet, but then so did Gangbusters. Gangbuster also predated it, and that used official police files as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And the Gangbusters, interesting thing about the Gangbusters, we haven't shown any of those, because, again, we do a lot of detectives, but we haven't done a lot of crime shows. But on Gangbusters, at the end of the show, they usually bring in a guy that had something to do, like one of the policemen or police sergeant or whatever, or police captain that had something to do with that particular case at the end of each Gangbusters episode. And so that was, you know, kind of the trademark for Gangbusters. I think that people do like true crime stories, with like Dragnet, like This Is Your FBI, like Gangbusters. Gangbusters on television was probably the only number one rated show that got canceled.
It's odd.
When it first came to television, it came after Jack Webb had introduced Dragnet to television, which did really great. I mean, it shot right up to the top of the ratings. But the problem was Jack Webb was the one that was producing it all, and he only had enough money to produce just so many episodes, kind of like what Chuck Norris did with the Walker Texas Ranger. It was off for a while because he had to come back, and the network had to fork over some more money for him to produce more shows. It's the same thing that happened with Jack Webb in the television version of Dragnet. Well, in between that time, they threw together episodes of Gangbusters for television based on the radio series. And they ran that until Dragnet was ready to come back, and then they abruptly just ended the Gangbusters and put on the Dragnet series. Now, if you were smart networking, you'd realize that Gangbusters held on to the number one spot. Wouldn't you find another place for it, or make it a double tandem there of Gangbusters and Dragnet? But
gosh,
they didn't.
Why wouldn't
they just ended it. Instead of continuing on, they just ended it. And Dragnet continued on.
Yeah. And you're right, Dave. I mean, these police shows, whether they're based on real stories or they're simply fiction, based on possible real, coincidences or whatever. I mean, look at the television and the movies that we've grown up with. Gosh, you had Adam. Not only did we have Dragnet and the FBI, you had Adam 12. Since then, you've had The Shield and so many other shows. There's always seems to be the cop show.
Even shows like Unsolved Mysteries, where they're taking actual crimes and displaying them and explaining them. And sometimes, even though they were kind of cold cases, they do come up with answers. I know that a friend of mine, the late, great Mel Hart, he appeared on several of my radio dramas. He was in an episode of that was shot up in Cleveland. The problem was when they aired it, they got an update on the story, and his section was cut out of it.
Oh no!
He still got royalties for whenever reshowed, which wasn't a whole lot, but he got some royalties from it from each time it repeated. But his section was pretty much all cut out because of the update. They found an answer, they found a conclusion, and in order to fit that into the program, his section got cut out.
Who was that gentleman had a show too? I think he was inspired to start the show when his own child was kidnapped. Adam.
Most Wanted.
Oh, Most Wanted. Most, yeah. There were
people
similar too, and some crimes were solved as a result of making a certain case public.
The interesting thing about Most Wanted was that there were a lot of people that were turned in because of that show. When people who had done something and it kind of disappeared and weren't found after the show, they did all but turn themselves in because were not surprised that somebody turned them in after each episode. When Fox first tried to cancel that show, the police departments across the country got together. Adam Walsh, that's right. Thank you, Warplebite.
Yeah.
Adam Walsh, got together all the police departments got together and petitioned Fox Network to bring it back, which they did for a little while to come yet. So that's how important that show was.
Yep. It was a good show. I remember when it first started running about 30 years ago because and I don't know, for some reason this weekend, things that happened 30 years ago are coming to mind.
They are. Maybe it's an anniversary that's coming up for somebody.
Yeah. It's like a prison term coming to.
Now.
I'm up for parole again.
You will be after this broadcast.
Yeah, boy. I'll be riding the couch again. it's okay. There's good movies on.
Always
good movies in Erie House. And good radio, including this episode, which we'll go ahead and wrap up, huh, Dave?
Yeah, Vorpalbyte, just one quick thing. Vorpalbyte, Rescue 911. Didn't William Shatner host that?
Maybe Vorpalbyte. I think so. And Unsolved Mysteries, was that Robert Stack, maybe?
Robert Stack, yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, now why don't we finish the, see what happens, and see if this guy can find these drawings that he slobbered all over.
And help the FBI solve a crime in the comic strip Bandits from This Is Your FBI. Here's the exciting conclusion.
And now back to tonight's FBI file, the comic strip Bandits. Because of the dangers thieves present to the American public, your FBI urges every citizen to be aware of the ease and cunning ways in which the thief will operate. Large sums of money should be kept in a bank. Valuables should be stored in a safe and burglar-proof spot. When leaving your home, the doors and windows should be locked securely, and the automobile driver who leaves his key in the ignition switch is playing into the hands of the many car thieves on the lookout for just such carelessness. In the event of a theft, no matter how large or how small, the alert citizen should immediately contact the local police, state clearly the extent and approximate time of theft, and give a complete and detailed description of the stolen article. Remember, the danger is present. The thief awaits your carelessness. Tonight's FBI file continues in the rooming house where Agent Taylor has located the old cartoonist.
No, my friend. Not under the mattress either. No? Well, search is complete. Cartoon is missing.
You can't remember what you might have done with that picture, Mr. Bentley? Could you perhaps have left it with a friend?
No, young man. The only thing I ever leave with my friends is an occasional IOU and the sweet memory of my company. Oh, wait. Hey, wait a minute.
Yes, sir?
The mail. When I was on the paper, I'd always make sure my copy was safe.
Uh-huh.
If I'd imbibed a little too freely, I'd mail my work to myself. The next morning, I'd wake up and wait for my work to arrive by the first mail.
You think you might have mailed this cartoon here, then?
I don't think it. I know it. To the front desk and the end of the search. Young man, these culprits are in custody. There'll be no reason why my cartoon can't appear in the paper, will there?
Oh, I can't see why they should be, Mr. Bentley.
Good. Ah, Friend Adams, come, my man. My morning mail, if you don't mind.
Who are you kidding, Bentley?
Now, Mr. Adams, would you check and see if there was any mail for Mr. Bentley, please?
Well, sure, only...
Only time is passing and the mail is waiting. Come, if you please, Mr. Adams.
Okay.
I'm sure he'll find it. I mailed it at a drugstore. Yeah, I distinctly remember the trouble I had licking that stamp. You see, gin and glue don't seem to mix.
There's nothing here for you, Bentley.
Are you quite sure of that, Mr. Adams?
Sure, I'm sure. You can check for yourself if you want to. Oh, excuse me.
Certainly. No mail, that's fine. There must be some mistake.
Think, sir, please. Could you have mailed it anywhere else?
Yeah,
Maybe you forgot to drop it in the box.
Yes,
that's right.
This is for you.
Oh, thanks.
Can't imagine.
Taylor speaking.
It's Crawford, Jim.
Yeah, Bill.
I found the key service that made that duplicate truck key.
Good. What's the name?
The Everest Key Shop on Broadway.
Okay, I'll be right over.
This is Mr. Jackson, Jim. He says he made the key all right.
Fine. Do you remember who you made the key for, Mr. Jackson?
Yes, I remember because I got those special blanks in a week ago, and this woman came in right after they arrived.
Now, you say it was a woman.
That's right.
You know who she was?
No, but she works around here someplace.
No, how do you know that, sir?
Well, she was in today, early this morning, for another key.
Uh-huh.
After I made it, she opened a bag to pay me, but she left her change purse at her office. She left, but came back just a few minutes later with the change.
I see. Can you Describe this woman, Mr. Jackson.
Well, she's red hair, medium height, mm-hmm. blue eyes, I think. Mighty pretty girl.
Working from the description of the woman given them by the key shop owner, agents Taylor and Crawford kept a close surveillance on every building in the area around the key shop. Pictures were taken of all redheads and then shown to the key shop owner. The fifth picture showed a woman who the owner identified as the woman who had purchased the key. Investigation showed her name to be Lucy Carter, a stenographer who worked for a real estate broker. On her way home from work that evening, she was followed by agents Taylor and Crawford.
Yes?
We're special agents of the FBI, Miss Carter. Here are our credentials.
I don't understand.
May we
I...
come in, please?
Really, I just got home. My place is
well,
a mess.
Well, we won't mind at all, Miss Carter. We'd just like to talk to you.
Well, all right, I guess.
Thank you. Go ahead, though.
I'll move some of these clothes. You can sit down here.
That won't be necessary, miss. Thank you, though.
Well, just what is it?
Well, we understand you had a key made at a shop not far from your office, the Everest Key Shop. Is that correct?
A key?
A week ago, miss.
I don't remember.
Well, the shop owner remembers you. He's a man named Jackson.
Oh, no. I'm afraid it's been some mistake.
No? You've never had a key made?
Well, I have in the past, yes. Copy of my door key.
Well, I wonder if we could see both keys that fit your door, then.
But I only have one.
I thought you had a copy made.
Well, I did. That's why, you see, because I lost the original.
Well, then how did you have Mr. Jackson make a copy without the original, Miss Carter?
My landlady gave me her key.
Mm-hmm. And how long ago did you have this door key made?
It's been a good year ago, I guess. Mm-hmm.
You haven't had a key made since?
No, I haven't. Oh, I'm sure there's been a mistake. Really, I haven't been in a key shop for a year.
Well, there's always the possibility of a mistake, Miss Carter. Sorry to have bothered you.
Anything, Jim?
Yeah, I checked with the landlady. She's been living here 6 months.
And she told us she'd had her apartment key made over a year ago. That was pretty clumsy.
Is that her apartment window up there?
Yeah, she turned her lights out about 10 minutes ago.
Okay, let's call the office for a relief watch. We'll take over again in the morning. This is car 9.
Suspect has just gotten home from work, Jim. On her way, she went to a furrier store. She put in an order for a $650 fur coat.
She really knows how to stretch that stenographer's salary.
Jim, she just came out of the apartment. All dressed up. Hailing a cab now.
Stick with her, Bill. When she reaches her destination, I'll take over.
This is car 7.
I'm calling from in front of the Crystal Club, Bill. I've been inside. Suspect is sitting at a table with 2 men. How soon can you get Bentley and bring him over here?
Give me 15 minutes, Jim. Right over here, sir. Hi, Jim.
Bill. Hello, Mr. Bentley.
Ah, cordial greeting to a gentleman who chooses to show me such an expensive evening. Fine. Shall we choose a table in order?
Now, Mr. Bentley, this is work, not play. I want you to take a look at that table right over there. One by the arch.
My vision has slipped a lot in the last 2 years. But perhaps we get a better view from the bar.
Well, wait a minute, sir. I'm sure if you'll try, you can see from here. So those 2 men and the girl right over there. They look familiar to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, sir?
It's pretty difficult for me to remember. Now, the only way I could know if they were the same people would be if I had my cartoon.
The cartoon still hasn't come in the mail at the rooming house, Jim.
Uh-huh. Well, Mr. Bentley, how long have you been staying there now?
Oh, I've been over 6 months.
Did you live there when you worked on the newspaper?
Oh, good heavens, no. Shall we sit at the bar?
Mr. Bentley, please, this is very important. Could you possibly remember your former address? Where you were living while you worked on the paper?
I not only can, but I shall with considerable ease.
Good.
Ah, many fond memories are associated with my former habitat.
Mr. Bentley, please, just
forget.
The address now, sir.
Huh?
You can talk on the way over.
Oh, well...
Go ahead,
Al?
Right.
Come on, Al. Come on.
Look, can't I even take time to light a cigar?
That truck pulls into the diner at 11:45 sharp. It's almost 11:30 now, and it takes exactly 12 minutes to drive from here to the diner.
Well, let's move.
I'll have to ask you folks to hold it a minute, please.
Yes, halt, or you'll be shot down like dogs.
Oh, Mr. Bentley, please.
Al, these
Hello,
men...
Miss Carter. I'm sure you remember me.
Oh, yes, I...
Mr. Bentley, are these the men you saw at the pier?
Well, I didn't see the woman, but the men look exactly like they do in the picture.
Picture? What picture are you talking about?
Show them the cartoon, Mr. Bentley.
Indeed I will. With great modesty, I present a masterpiece.
What's this?
Genius, madam, genius.
Well, this cartoon was sketched as you dumped the meat truck off the Water Street Pier.
Now, wait a minute.
Please, please, don't argue, my friends. Let's keep the plot simple. Wham, bam, pow. End of strip, end of story.
Lucy Carter, Al Dawson, and Fred White were tried on charges of theft of government property and sentenced to terms in federal penitentiaries. Special Agent Taylor was able to arrest the three criminals in tonight's story because of positive identification. He went to Bentley's old address and there found the mailed envelope containing the cartoon. The characters were well drawn, and Special Agent Taylor returned to the office where positive identification was made from other pictures of suspects on file. And so your FBI carried out one of its major duties, that of protecting government property, and in doing so, removed three dangerous thieves from circulation. For while the thieves in tonight's story had stolen from the government, their next theft could very well have been your property. Your FBI fully realizes the dangers presented by the thief, and it further realizes the importance of its chief assignment, the job of protecting you, the American people. Would you like to retire an independent comfort in your 60s? Would you like to make sure your children get a good education? Would you like to own your own home free and clear years ahead of time? There's a man who can tell you how, and he's a neighbor of yours, no farther away than your telephone. He's your local Equitable Society representative. Without any obligation to you, he'll be glad to show you how to make your dreams of future security come true, no matter what happens. So get acquainted with this friendly, helpful neighbor of yours. Consult your local telephone directory for the name of your local representative of the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. Next week, we will dramatize another case from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Its subject, bank robbery. Its title, The Little Tin Box. The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of places or persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Dick Carr. Your narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. Others in the cast were Anthony Barrett, Tony Caruso, Walter Catlett, Whitfield Connor, J.C. Flippin, J.A. Hughes, Tony Hughes, and G.G. Pearson. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling transcribed story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Little Tin Box on This Is Your FBI. This program came to you from Hollywood.
And it's now being brought to you by Erie House Radio.
I'm checking something out here, but Larry Keating was he was an announcer on old-time radio. But I'm thinking that he also, was he not the next-door neighbor on Wilbur Post on Mr. Ed Wilbur? I'm pretty sure he was the neighbor on that particular series.
I don't know. I just know that if you play the theme for Mr. Ed backwards, there's satanic messages.
Well, and you have to shovel up afterwards.
Yeah.
So.
No, I went back in the days when I was still using turntables as a disc jockey. I did. I someone There was like this urban legend about playing the theme from Mr. Ed backwards. Well, and a company released a bunch of albums called TV Tunes. I would often end my show playing a couple themes from television shows in an effort to chase people out of the bar, which backfired. However, in due course of playing one backwards, there was indeed a satanic message.
Larry Keating was indeed Roger Addison in seasons 1 through 3 of Mr. Ed. So there you go.
Everything comes full circle in Erie House, whether it's comic strips, radio, television, no matter the type of media, it all comes right back here.
It does. We make it happen some way or other.
There's a fun comic strip we hadn't yet. Oh, but before we get to that, though, there is something to be learned from This Is Your FBI. House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story. Gar.
With apologies to Gar, if you need help solving a crime, seek the assistance of an alcoholic cartoon artist. That'll help you solve the crime in at least double the time. That's a crime stopper. There you go.
And if you show up to interview him wearing a military uniform, you might hear him say,
"Take me inside and jack the food."
Sorry, I love that soundbite.
You might.
I just love that soundbite.
So you were going to get into another comic strip or something?
Yeah, it was originally a cartoon in the silent era. But many of us will remember Felix the Cat, first released in 1919 in a cartoon called Feline Follies. In later years, he was voiced by a variety of people, including Waffer Teffley, Jack Mercer, who was also the voice of Popeye for a time, David Cullen, Tom Adcox Hernandez, and Charlie Adler. In much later adaptations in recent, then Mr. Adler was in the 90s, and the list goes on and on and on. But he appeared in a comic strip starting in 1923, drawn by Sullivan, Messmer, and later Joe Oriolo.
So it started as a silent cartoon and ended up as a comic strip that way.
Yeah. Much better known, I think, at least from my own recollection, is from the cartoons.
Right. And I remember getting up on Saturday mornings, and the only day in the week I could get up early was Saturday morning. Matter of fact, I got up so early, the first thing that would come on would be the stinking farm reports. Not that there were a lot of farms in Buffalo, New York at the time. And but there were like they were kind of like educational films around the farm and things like that, and it would lead into Felix the Cat on a Saturday morning. But Saturday morning was the only morning I could get up early because I didn't want to miss any of my cartoon favorites.
Oh, Saturday mornings were such a blast for our generation. For years it became a big event too. I remember they would have these commercials. When they would premiere these new cartoons, this odd one came out in 1969 that some people didn't think would fly, called Scooby-Doo. But, boy, that one...
Oh, I remember that. Oh. And my sister and I watched that from the get-go and absolutely loved it. I mean, what's not to love? A slightly talking dog and a slightly aging hippie who's always eating, you know, and... Scooby Snaps and all those things. So, you know, it just...
I love the guests they had. They had such great guests, too, for voices, including Vincent Price and many, many others. From
Jerry Reed. And they even had Laurel and Hardy. I remember when Laurel and Hardy was on there, they stopped by because their car broke down, and they stopped by with Mystery Machine, and there's Laurel and Hardy. Said, "Hey, have an accident?" And Stanley says, "No, thanks. We just had one." You know.
Yeah. Such fun memories, and again, many of those did stem from cartoon strips. Now one comic strip that I don't recall. Now, Dave, you can correct me on this if you know of any, but I don't remember any television series, any cartoons, just comic books and comic strips of Prince Valiant.
You know what? I did look that one up, and there was no radio for that. Prince Valiant came to comic strips in 1937. It came to TV in 1954 in a live-action series.
I think it did that.
As a summer replacement somewhere. There are no existing copies of that as far as I know. And in 1991, in one of the more religious-type networks, it was a TV cartoon for a short time.
Hmm.
So that was the only one. But I did look up, you know, Dick Tracy's, was comic strip in 31, came to radio in 34, came to comic book in 1936, came to film in 37, and TV in 1950. Just again to show the lineage of where some of these, where these shows come from sometimes.
How did you feel about the Dick Tracy movie with Warren Beatty and a cast? That was another one with a cast of cajillions.
You know what? I enjoyed it. You know what was funny is when I saw that, I didn't even know Abe Vigoda was still alive. He looked the same age and old as, I think that guy was born old, but he looked the same age as he did when he was on Barney Miller. Actually, he looked probably better than he was when he was on Barney Miller. But, I enjoyed it. You know, I enjoyed the little trick that Warren Beatty did with Dustin Hoffman when he was mumbles. You could understand he took and slowed down the recording. It was a wire recording. He slowed down the recording to the point where you could understand what he was saying. I thought that was pretty cool. I enjoyed Madonna's music throughout it, even. I liked it. I liked the coloring. That was a fun one for Disney because Warren Beatty couldn't stand any of the directors. He got two of them fired. And finally he said, "Fine, you direct it." So we did.
Yeah, why not? I do, you know, not being a fan of remakes and things like that, but when something is a true homage and they try to capture the flavor, the period, that was definitely a period piece the way they did it.
It was.
Much like Peter Jackson's King Kong. Thank God he kept it a period piece.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And to be honest with you, I did kind of enjoy that. I don't watch a lot of remakes. I was at the gym working out when that was on once, so I stuck around, did a few extra miles watching some of that. And, yeah, it was it was done very well, and they did. It was more homage than whenever they reboot the Planet of the Apes movies.
Yes. So. Well, we had a lot of fun with you tonight, folks, and we appreciate you tuning in. Whether you're live here now with us, like Fogs and Vorpal have been, or if you're listening in the archive, just keep coming back. We got more and more and more of this stuff.
Tell them what we got next week, Dale. It's exciting.
Oh, my gosh. Before we forget, it's the Great Big Sci-Fi Radio Drive-In. That's right. It's a virtual drive-in with two amazing classic made-for-radio programs that are adaptations of classic science fiction films. Yeah, that's right. On Friday, it's The Day the Earth Stood Still with Michael Rennie from Los. And then on Saturday, Caltex Theater from Australia with an adaptation of Forbidden Planet. Now, that ought to be fun.
Yes. We're both looking forward to that, and so is Gar.
I hope so. These are really, you know, films that are indelibly planted on us. If you're a fan of science fiction from the 50s, I mean, they're really the penultimate of the era. They end up on every top 10 list of sci-fi films from that era. And these are great radio adaptations. I cannot wait to enjoy them. I have purposely not listened to them so I can enjoy them for the first time along with you. But until then, we'll see you Say goodbye, Dave.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And just him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Everybody missed Don't Come Alone in the candle blast. Oh, well.
It's pretty close.
Unless they're here in the archive, then it's smooth as ship glass.
There's something I want people to know if they're here in the afterbirth, that this weekend, upcoming weekend, is all due to you, Dale, because when I originally heard the only version of the Lux Radio Theater's version of The Day the Earth Stood Still, when I originally heard that, it was only about 40-some minutes. Somebody had clipped out not just the commercials, but also the opening and the closing. And I didn't even really, I never really went back to researchers to find it, and you knew it was there in full. And I didn't realize that the that someone had done a radio version of Forbidden Planet. Very interesting. It's a very interesting a program. So
well,
it's
sometimes even a blind squirrel can find a nut.
No, you get full credit for this, and you paired them up and you made the great drive-in thing. So Dale, the guy who never takes credit for working on this as much as he does, gets full credit for next weekend.
I'm not used to this. Quite the opposite. Dave, this is obviously a team effort, this show. I mean, without your influence, I don't know that I'd be doing it this way. And nobody else is doing old-time radio this way.
No.
We didn't have time for it tonight, but I love the commercial jukebox and Wheel of Radio is always fun. When we have extra time, it's not that we don't like talking to you, but we like bringing you more radio. So we'll throw in some old-time commercials or little clips for your listening edification.
Yep, see, we wouldn't have had time for my FBI in Place of War anyway.
Yeah, probably not.
Because some weekends we have a lot more radio to put in because I shows like this particular weekend, it's a lot harder to get programs together. And if we would have left something out or one or two of these out, it would have made it impossible to make another weekend out of it. So let's bunch in all the radio. We have plenty of times where we were only going to get a couple of shows in there because there's plenty of other shows you can make with them. But if you're going to talk about comic strips or not-so-funny comic strips, it's a lot harder to dig up some of these fun. I didn't want to leave anybody out. That's it.
And it doesn't sound like you did. I mean, we had a comic strip Murders. We had a comic strip Bandit.
comic strip Killer.
Yes. And
the
Crisis
Shadow.
Of Dirk Diamond.
Killer. Yep. So I tell you what, out of all these, the biggest kick I got out of the whole weekend was that wonderful suspense. And again, another reason I get such a kick out of it, because this is when suspense just didn't have the budget anymore. This was just before, this was in early December of 59. In January of 60, the CBS moved all their stuff to New York to take any space that radio was using to be able to make use of that for the television network. And they just didn't. But for two more years, they still continued to support both the Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, and Suspense. And appropriately, they both went off the air the same night. They aired back to back, and they both went off the air the same night, thus kind of signaling that's what everybody says was the end of the golden age of radio when those two shows went off the air.
Yeah, they ran so long and so successfully. Once they were done, it's pretty much done. Dave, now we told them what's going on next weekend, of course, Sci-Fi Radio Drive-In, which maybe we'll do more than one of these going forward. We're starting to sniff around and find some more movies and keep the virtual drive-in alive, especially if it does well next weekend. But should we spill what we're planning for this Halloween?
Well, we don't have it all there, but you can give some idea there because we don't have it all wrapped up
yet. We'll give them a taste, a hint, a little flavor. We started a tradition last year, which we intend to carry out for as long as we keep doing this, which who knows. On this very night that the original broadcast of War of the Worlds was October 30th, so we played it for the first time on Erie House Radio last year. As it happens, this year is the 80th anniversary of the original broadcast of War of the Worlds on Mercury Theater by the great Orson Welles. Well,
we're
going to
do it a little different, aren't we?
Yes, the great Dave Binkley postulated, why couldn't we kind of recreate that evening? Now, we're not going to give you all the details, but not everybody listening to the radio, part of the reason that it became a panic is not everybody was listening to that show from the very beginning. In fact, many were listening to another broadcast. Now, we'll get into the details later on. And some will keep it a surprise.
Let's just put it this way. The Mercury Theater on the Air went up directly opposite the number one radio program rated of the year. So whenever you get a new show that starts off against a number one, what show do you think people are going to be listening to?
Probably
the number one show. Right. So we're going to listen to it. We're going to present it the way that many people actually heard the War of the Worlds on that night.
And in doing so, they missed the very, very beginning with the disclaimer. Now, it wasn't even really a disclaimer. It was an intro.
It was an intro, right. And if you heard it, that was the one thing I never understood, Dale. I never understood why when you listen to the War of the Worlds and the full broadcast, they tell you right up front the beginning that, the Mercury Theater on the Air and Orson Welles, and he did a little opening, this and that, and the next thing you know, you're into the story. I never understood why that panicked people. Until we found
out.
Now
we know.
That's not the way that most people heard it. And we have a wonderful copy of the program that was on opposite it that most people heard it to. And then we can switch over to the program that that they did during a certain point. We'll flip it over at that same time.
And perhaps you'll see why that panic really started.
That's going to be fun.
And that'll be October 30th. Just a small smidge of the entertainment we have coming up for this Halloween. It's a very special time of the year for me, and I want to share as much Halloween radio as we can. I generally take some vacation time to spend with you here on Erie House. So there.
There you have it. Yep, we're gonna have a lot of fun that. And again, do what we do so well here. Present it in a way that no one else has ever presented it before.
No, and to give you more of a taste of some weekends looming in the future between now and the Halloween season. Now you know, of course, Sci-Fi Radio Drive-In next weekend. The following weekend, we'll be shutting the door with some suspense, Lights Out, and The Mysterious Traveler. The weekend after that, A Man or a Mouse. X-1, Arch Obler plays. And something I'm not familiar with, Dave will enlighten me on Dave Short with Right Before My Eyes. The following weekend, Oh Rats! And A Really Big Shoe.
All kinds of fun. It's a blast being here and sharing this with everybody. So we hope.
Oh gosh, with more CBS Radio Mystery Theater, Boston Blackie, and one of my favorites that I've come to love really over the last couple of years since I first discovered them on satellite radio is the Damon Runyon Theater.
Yes, I think that's what, now my wife, it drives her nuts. Again, like I've always said, I used to play these on my boombox, my MP3 reading boombox. And so when I'm playing them at night, my wife always, I turn it down. I said, I can't hear it if I turn it down, because, you know, between my head being down and my hearing being so lousy after darn near 40 years of headphones, that so it drives her batty. But that's one of the shows that you are not to ever play that show again at night. Just the way they talked just absolutely drove her nuts.
Mrs. K has the same issue. She has
old
a difficulty
Runyon,
with British humor.
The gangster type things and the way that they talked and worded things and talked to each other and stuff, it was just enough to really completely drive them nuts. So
that's too bad, because that's the very thing that makes me enjoy Damon Runyon Theater. But we all have different things we like, you know.
Well,
Mrs. K, for example, Mrs.
Right.
K, for example, cannot embrace British humor because she has difficulty understanding not just the accent, but the diction, the different words that they use.
Right. Yep.
Across the pond, as it were. But,
yep, yep.
So. Yeah.
Well. Looks like our buddy R is doing a show tonight. Weirdness, really bad movie, will be on tomorrow night at 10:30 p.m. about 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and the Vortex horrorhost.net. And then on Monday we'll be back with a Weirdness, really bad movie, Sons of Steel, with Lisa Pierce as host. And there's a bunch of people in Youngstown that are protesting the Weirdness, really bad movie.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
As they were,
yep.
As they should. The heck with Youngstown.
Should.
The heck with Youngstown. And for those of you listening here in the archive, Dave is referring to September 9th and September 10th of 2018. A.D.
Yes.
Started 59. No, never mind. Sorry. That's being a bit too precise. But thanks again for listening. I think we're pretty much comic stripped out. Any other announcements, Dave?
Nope. I think that's what we got. We got some always exciting things going on here, and I'm working on some other projects. You never know when those may pop up for people to see, but you never know.
And keep watching Facebook for Eerie House links to different shows and to, of course, the upcoming Sci-Fi Radio Drive-In. We'll see you next time on Eerie House.
Good night, Jimmy.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.